Welcome to the Bookcasting Podcast.
Yeah. It's Ola here and
Tom Erik.
Yeah,
that's me.
So today we're talking about the experience economy, and I'm not even going to say the names of those dudes.
Let's just say Pine and Gilmore.
Yeah, Pine, Mr. Pine. We're going to go through the 4 points of the book. It's starting at the lower left corner, extract commodities, going up, make goods, deliver services, and top right corner, stage experiences.
Yes.
And you could tell Pine loves experiences. Gilmore is more to the deliver services. He likes that better. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, so how do you feel about this book, Tom Erik? Do you think our listeners should read it?
Well, I listened to this book on Audible first, and then I realized I actually have the book. And now that I'm holding the book in my hand and looking at it, I was just, no. It's, just don't bother. No.
Yep.
I guess there are some interesting points, but we're going to tell you about them so that you don't have to read the book.
Yeah. Here we are.
Is that fair? To do
it?
Yeah.
Much faster.
Much faster.
It's a short book.
It's thick, but I think the pages are very thick. That's why. So it's about
30 minutes. I actually have a version here.
200 pages.
I have a version. It's on Audible, and it's 3 hours.
Yeah. And you can put it on triple speed and get through it in...
One and a half.
Well, no, triple speed. In 1 hour. In 45 minutes.
Yeah, but we are going to do it in half an hour. So you'll...
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be better for you.
Better for you, better for us.
So let's use this example of coffee right away. So the 4 points are, I'll say it again, commodities, goods, services, experiences.
Yeah.
So a commodity is basically the coffee bean. It's the bean.
Yeah. So commodities are anything extracted from nature, I guess, that are unaltered. And sold as they are.
Yeah.
So when you take your crops, your grains, or coffee beans, or bananas, or your crude oil, or what else? Yeah.
Let's stick to coffee.
We can stick to coffee. You take your coffee bean and sell it on the international coffee market. It's a commodity. And it's very cheap.
Yeah. So we have this... We went to a coffee store, Benedict and I, United States.
In North Carolina?
And no, in New Jersey. What was it called? The Turnpike? The Turnstile? The Turnstile.
Oh, with our friend Mike?
Yep. Our friend Mike.
We were hoping Mike was going to join us for... either this episode or the last one, but...
He thought that the book was boring, so he didn't bother. That's
why.
Nah, but so we... Okay, so he does that. He buys the beans as a commodity, and in his own shop, like in the room where you will sit and drink coffee, he will brenne bønne, what do you say?
Roast the beans? Roast the beans. So he actually buys the coffee beans directly from, I guess he buys it on the international market. He doesn't go to an actual coffee bean farmer.
He has a Norwegian hero.
Yeah.
That guy he travels down and picks. The beans. He goes to the farmers.
Yeah.
And picks them out. And I don't, he, this guy doesn't travel, but I think, I definitively think that he buys it off some specific farmers directly.
Okay.
So because he's into that whole, you know, give them, let them get money so they can have salt in the wounds.
Get rid of the middle guys.
Yeah.
All right.
So he buys the commodity. So that's the first step here. It's, you could actually, you and me, we could start a coffee farm.
Yeah. And that's, we would make step. About $1 per pound of coffee beans.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great. Let's go.
$2 per kilogram.
Okay.
Well, I guess this is in, when was this book written?
It says in the book.
That says in the book. 99, you could get a pound of coffee beans, raw coffee beans, for $1.
Fuck, I'm just fooling around with the internet. I'm trying to make this shit work, but I can't.
The internet in North Carolina sucks, I just have to say. And now the phone is ringing.
We have to remember how to do this relevant for a blogger. Shit, we almost tricked ourselves. Yeah, a commodity here. So your blog. How can that be a commodity? It can't, can it?
It's like if you think of a newspaper, then I guess the commodity is the trees that you make the paper from.
Yeah.
Doesn't it
Yeah, let's
say that. It has to be something like that. So if, for the internet, anything on the internet, the commodity would be, I don't know, server power?
I can take a chance now. So
okay.
So this whole thing is big in the States. To say that someone's product is a commodity, it's like, you know, it's not very nice to say it. I'll do it anyway. So some people say that news are becoming commodity.
Yeah.
And for different reasons, but I can say that one argument why you can say it and get away with it is that most people won't charge you for news.
Yeah.
So that's not the same as coffee beans, because they will charge you. It's just that they'll charge you very little. So you have to do something interesting with the news so that I will be willing to pay.
Yeah.
Shit, I'm out on a tangent here. I think we'll just do the whole internet thing when we come to deliver services.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. Okay,
so
what's the difference between a commodity and goods?
Yes, so Mike is his name. It turns out coffee shop in New Jersey. He buys the beans. They come to him in a big sack. They're green. The green beans. So what he does is he has the roaster. He puts them in the roaster and he roasts them and he grinds them and he makes coffee. And at some point there, it's goods.
Yeah.
When he grinds it. So I
yeah. When you pack, you put it in a bag and you sell the bag for people to take it home and brew their coffee in their kitchen.
Yes.
That's a good.
I did that. Yeah. I bought coffee from him and it was great.
Yeah.
I made it at home.
And that's the added value to the price of $1 of about 5 to 25 cents per cup of coffee. Yeah.
25 cents?
Between 5 and 25 cents per cup.
No. So, it's more. So, anyway, let's just keep moving now because we're on the roll. So, deliver services. And then suddenly I'm in his coffee shop and I'm drinking my coffee there. Then suddenly he's actually delivering me a host of services.
Mm.
Or is it one service?
Well, I guess the main service is that instead of you bringing the coffee home and brewing it in your coffee maker, he is brewing the coffee for you, which is the service. So he's doing something that you could have done yourself, which is making the coffee and serving it to you. That's the service.
Yes.
And there are some other services around it, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I did that too. So we had a cup of coffee there.
Yeah.
Also, it was nice. So that's very... And now we're at the internet.
Yeah.
Your blog is basically a service. I go to your blog, I read something, I find it interesting, and I'm happy. As a service. Or is it only if I pay?
Isn't it an experience, rather?
Yeah, so now that's a crucial point. What's the difference?
Because, well, I'm getting the sense that a service is that is you're paying someone else to do something you could have done yourself.
Yeah.
Or in the case of a blog, I guess you're giving the blogger your kind of your presence or your page view. In turn to read something that they wrote.
Yes.
But could
that's good.
So the question is, if you could have written the blog yourself, then it's a service. If you can't, if you're taking away something new from reading that blog, some new knowledge that you didn't have before, then I guess it has to be an experience because it's something that you couldn't have done yourself.
Yeah. So let's go back to the coffee shop now. I would say that actually, I go to a coffee shop, I get a cup of coffee, and the waitress is rude to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's an experience.
It's a bad experience.
Yes.
But it's still an experience.
Yes, it's an experience. So,
but I think in the case of the coffee shop, a good experience is something that goes beyond the pure function.
Yes.
Of, you know, brewing the coffee and serving it to you. Which is a service, you know, the experience around it, which is that you come into the cafe, it's a relaxing atmosphere. Maybe you had a stressful day at work. You come in there and you start feeling relaxed, and maybe there are some people there that you know that maybe there are regulars there and you meet them, you know, every Friday or something that.
Yeah.
And so this cafe becomes somewhere where there's more happening than you just drinking the coffee. It's somewhere where you're actually, there's a context to your life that is happening, which is connected to the service of you buying that coffee. But it's kind of, you know, it's an added dimension, which is the experience.
And
so how can we translate this to the bloggers?
Yeah, I think that so say tell us about the blog that you really like.
Wow. That was it. Well, I do enjoy Seth Godin's blog.
Yep.
Good.
Why?
Because it's very short. He doesn't try to wrap. He has a main point, and he doesn't try to wrap it into a lot of words. He just
you know,
he says what he has to say. This is what I have to say today. There you go. Now go do other stuff.
Yeah.
Which I find that's a good experience, because often when I am roaming around on the internet, I don't want to spend a lot of time anywhere. I'm just, you know, I have a few minutes. I'm drinking my coffee in the morning and I'm just checking Seth Godin's blog, and it's always good because he has some short point that he wants to make and is good. It's easy to consume in 5 minutes.
It's good. Why do you know it's going to be?
Why I know it's going to be good? Because it sticks to the same format. It's always short.
And it is Seth Godin.
And it is Seth Godin, so I know it's going to be interesting whatever he has to say, because I know that he wouldn't post anything on his blog that wasn't worth posting. That comes from experience.
Yeah, that's one of the points they're making. It is that you have it's like a play. You have the characters.
Yes.
And they give So Seth Godin has a character, and you know what you get, and you like what you get, and that's why you come back, and you get an experience, because I could have done the same. I could have written some marketing mumbo jumbo real short on my blog. As a matter of fact, I do that.
Yeah.
But it will never give you the same experience as going in there, see Seth Godin's bold head and reading, because you know that this guy, he knows his shit, you know?
Yeah.
And some of the stuff he says is a little bit crazy, but still you can go to the lunchroom and you can say it and know that, you know, this is... the guy knows what he's talking about. So if somebody disagrees, he'll...
Seth Godin said it.
Yeah, but you know, so yeah, so that's an experience. And but will you? So the whole question here, according to these guys, I am now just taking liberties. Is will you pay for it?
Yeah. So just to make a point about the stage and the theater thing, because it's actually the subtitle of the book is Work is Theater and Every Business a Stage.
Yes.
I think that's an interesting subtext in this is that traditionally, so if you take the analogy of a theater, where you have the traditional stage theater or script theater, I guess, where actors they rehearse for months and months and months and months and memorize the script and I guess they have a director who directs them, and then they rehearse and everything works, and they everything is the same every time basically.
Yeah.
When they start, they have the premiere, and then it's the same show every night for I guess, you know, a few months, and that's it. That's one way to do business. And a different way to do business is to just do improvisation.
Yes.
Just take whatever situation is there and then, you know, do whatever feels right or whatever comes to mind. And I guess some people do business like that.
Yes.
And then there is the hybrid, the crossover version, which is to combine the two worlds. So the example from the book is that street artists often follow this pattern, which is to have some tricks or some acts that you do, that you rehearse, and that you memorize parts, individual parts of your act. But then when you come to your audience in the street, whatever is there, you improvise based on the audience and the feedback that you get, which part you pick out to do in that particular moment. But whenever you do one particular act, you kind of do the rehearsed, memorized thing that you have. And I think the lesson here is that there's a lot to gain from practice your your
I have an example
speech. If
I
you're,
have an example.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because I did this with engineers.
Yeah.
Information technology engineers. So basically, They work with technology, these guys, and that's what they love. But what we did was they were going to conferences, and the goal, one of the goals of this was to find other engineers and recruit them to the consultancy. So we practiced, you know, saying your name, posture, smiling, yeah. And of course, you won't do it exactly as you've practiced, like a play. You won't do it like a play, but you will. A lot of it will be the same. You know, you will say your name, and hopefully, you will say it in the same tone of voice. And we'll also practice on how to talk about the company instead of rambling on about what you do. Just keep it real short, and that's so much easier if you practiced first and have something you really know is good, and just like then you can say two sentences and you're done, and you can get other guy or girl talking. Yeah. And that was it worked. I observed them at the conference, and they did it, and I think they made the other guys feel good. Because they're also awkward, and they think it's a little bit scary. So, yeah, it worked.
Yeah. So I also I've worked as a sales professional.
Yeah.
Previously, and I really found. So, first 100 days of selling, which is a book.
Yes.
About
yes.
selling, also talks yes. about this to practice and rehearse your pitches and your sales call kind of lines
to perfection,
which is not to say that, you know, whatever the other person says doesn't matter, I'm just going to follow this script. That's not the point, because then you could just read from a script. The point is that you memorize, you know, something that you're comfortable saying. And it feels yes. natural, and it sounds natural. And then you will yes. improvise from that and adjust yes. to the situation and adjust to the person that you're talking to.
And you might even, you're in the conversation and you might even choose, okay, I'm going to do this line now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do this question now. And yeah, so, I do that.
So
it works for me.
The big example from this book is the Disney... the Disneyland,
yeah.
Theme parks in the U.S. Where all the employees are cast members.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yes.
They're not workers or employees. They're cast members.
Yes.
And they have rehearsed parts that they play and improvise from when interacting with the visitors in the parks.
Yeah, the kids. Yeah,
and so I guess their point is that Disney was really the first player in the experience economy. I don't know if that's true, but how can we apply this to, let's say, blogging?
Yeah, it's not that easy, basically, because a lot of them. It's you can't really create that much of an experience online.
Mm-hmm.
That is the problem. So what I would actually recommend, if you want to do this, if you want to give your audience an experience, is to use several
mediums.
It's a good example with the Serena Star Leonard that we had on an earlier episode. So what she has a blog and she writes about marketing basically and then she also does she's doing courses also.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's what Seth Godin does too. You know, that's why he is so believable, you know.
Yeah.
So he comes to a conference, and you can experience him live, And
I think that's the point, actually, that you can't just, you know, start some blog and, you know, hide behind it and just, you know, write some stuff and think that you're going to be famous. Yeah. You have to actually give from yourself and, you know, be personal and really, you know, let people experience you and, you know, what kind of person you are and give them that. That's the way.
So, yeah.
And that means being personal on your blog. That means, you know, showing your face. That means maybe putting up a video and being on Facebook and talking to people there. And perhaps even promoting yourself in kind of like social gatherings, like going to a conference and you know, having the balls to go up there and give a talk, basically.
So I also think it's very important that you interact. So incentivize people to write comments on your blog and and answer them, you know, personally. And in you need to engage people, basically. That's the difference between, so your blog is a service if people just go in there and read it. But when you start to engage people, engage their feelings, that's when you have an experience.
Mm-hmm. So we have actually a good example. A friend of ours who started blogging about his food.
Yeah.
So he started on something called Paleo something or other. Like,
right.
Basically no grains, no beans, and no sugar.
Yeah.
Is that it?
I don't know.
Well, so
that's not really your point, is it?
That's not the point. The point is that he's very personal on his blog, and he's very honest about why he's doing this. About
and he's answering the comments, every and about, kind of silly comment.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I found a lot of inspiration from this.
So what have you done because of the blog?
Well, I've started kind of being more critical about my food, because I never even considered grains being a problem.
No,
I've thought, you know, that whole grains are better than, you know, white bread. But I've never even considered the fact that just, you know, the grains themselves are bad, and that there are chemicals in them that our digestion systems aren't designed to deal with. So many of his blog posts inspired me to go further to read more about this and about the chemistry of it all. And
you engaged.
I engaged with it, and I gave him feedback, and I started kind of trying to see what I could do about it. So I've actually personally reduced my grain consumption considerably because of this, and I've actually found that I have better digestion from it too.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because on the Wikipedia page about the experience economy, you have these points that we've been going through, commodity, goods, service, experience, and they have a fifth stage, basically.
Yeah.
And it's a transformation business.
Yeah.
Charges for the benefit customers or guests receive by spending time there.
Yeah.
So if you actually have lowered your grain intake and then your digestion is getting better because of it,
I should give him money.
Yeah, that's the only thing. But yeah, you should.
Well,
or give him like the currency of the internets.
Yeah,
which is to show your engagement and share his stuff and but yeah,
which I do,
because that's, you know, experience is about how the feeling that the customer get by engaging with you, but a transformation business is the benefit. Mm-hmm. So your benefit is one, okay, your digestion is getting better, but you also so the feeling is that you feel better because you understand more about your diet.
Yeah.
And the benefit is that you're actually, your diet is changed and your digestion is functioning better and you get more healthy, basically.
Yep.
Yes. So there you have it.
So that's
we have an example.
Yeah.
What's the name of the blog?
Steinaldermannen.no.
Yes.
Yes. He writes only in Norwegian, does he? I think maybe.
Yeah,
he does.
We can do something about that.
Yeah.
We'll help him. We'll help him.
We can help him.
We can help him.
We can help him to write the Russian.
Yes, with a Russian accent. So that's the stages, and I hate to say it again, but you know, don't read this book because the points that we went through now, that's it. And also I must say, so I'm on the Wikipedias here, and it says like the start of the article, the experience economy, is literally the term experience economy was first described in an article published in 1998 by Pine and Gilmore. They wrote an article.
Right.
Yeah.
And
then at some point they thought, oh, dude, we'll make a book. Yeah.
Because they run a business together, consultancy group.
Yes. Stanley. Yes.
So it's content marketing, is it?
That is content marketing.
Yeah.
They write a book, they make you think that they're smart, and then you hire them. Is that what you mean?
Strategic Horizons LLP. explore the frontiers of business and help executives see the world differently.
Wow. That sounds like yoga to me. Yeah.
And there's a picture of them holding a rope.
Are they hanging somebody or what?
They look kind of serious on this picture.
Hire them. That's what you should do.
You should hire them, yeah.
Don't buy the book. Yeah. Hire the motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Yeah, Planet Gilmore. I you know, I guess they really know this shit.
Yeah.
So, let's wrap it up. I'll do the stages one more time.
Yeah.
It is product, service.
Oh, you have to start over.
Okay. It is commodity, business, goods, business, service, business, experience, business. Transformation business
that
charges the benefit customers receive by spending time there.
Yeah, that was excellent.
Yes,
and very intimate.
Oh, yes. I don't feel it's wrong to say this now, but I couldn't finish the book.
Well, I listened to all of it on Audible, but yeah,
you are a great guy. You did that to be nice, didn't you?
But then the Audible version doesn't have the footnotes, or the end notes, rather. In the book, it has, I think, like 50 pages of notes, end notes.
It's actually an abridged version, the Audible.
Yeah.
So,
I guess it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Go to
thanks
our
for listening.
Facebook page.
Yeah.
Facebook.com/bookcastingpodcast.
Yarr.
And our website, bookcastingpodcast.com.
Yes, yes.
We are also on Twitter.
Yes.
At bookcasting. Yeah.
Yes.
That's pretty much it.
Yes.
Next time, I think we might have Beth Goldstein on.
Oh, that is going to be something. It's 20 days. The 23rd. Beth Goldstein is going to talk about her book Lucky by Design. Yeah, she's my former marketing professor at Boston University.
Yeah.
Okay.
Excellent.
Yes.
Thanks for now.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.